Good morning, listeners. NBC representatives in London and Berlin are ready now with their regular early morning reports from overseas. We'll hear from them in just a moment, and then from Washington, where Earl Godwin will bring us the news from the nation's capital. And now, we take you to London.
This is London at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. The scene of the Finnish peace talks, it is now reported, are shifted to Moscow. The Council of Ministers met in Paris this morning under President Lebrun. Mr. Daladier gave a general review of the diplomatic and military situation, dwelling specially on Finland. It is reported that there is a note of optimism in Paris today with regard to Finnish resistance, which France is willing to support, which was not felt there yesterday. It's reported here this morning that Moscow claims capture of more islands in the Bay of Vipuri. The swift development of the possibility of peace talks between Finland and Russia, or the possibility of some peace between Finland and Russia, holds attention here today. From rumored reports, the proposals were likely to the official admission that they had been received was a matter of, well, of hours. Details of the Russian proposals are not available, but they are said to be stiffer than the terms which the Finns refused before Russia invaded Finland. All that can be said at this moment is that the situation now created is viewed here as serious, as extremely serious. The visits of ex-president Svinhufvud to Berlin and of Herr von Ribbentrop to Rome have aroused an interest perhaps more anxious than anything this war has caused. Herr von Ribbentrop is said to have left Berlin for Rome by special train this morning. With him are the economic ministers of the economic minister of the Reich, the head of the press bureau, the legal advisor to the foreign office, and various other officials. Observers in all capitals are giving their views. Some hold that Germany will make it clear in Rome that she wants no foreign intervention in the Finnish situation. Others see a move to safeguard for Germany shipments of the Swedish iron ore, which have long been claimed to be a vital necessity to Germany's successful continuation of the war. French writers state without mincing their words that Germany has openly threatened Sweden over this iron ore matter and will involve both Sweden and Norway in the war rather than risk losing these ships. Berlin, in the meanwhile, announces that Herr von Ribbentrop's visit to Rome is a normal step in the relations between the two countries. Marshal Goering's paper is quoted as saying, however, that he has gone to discuss burning questions of world politics. Rome is credited with considering that the visit will have vast political consequences. Officials there are reported as thinking that it may produce results as fateful as Herr von Ribbentrop's visit to Moscow last summer, and this gave the Berlin-Moscow pact. In some quarters here, there is a suggestion that the German foreign minister's trip will be concerned with the Italian protest over the blockade stopping coal deliveries from Germany. Whatever the real purpose of the visit, it seems obvious to any observer that Herr von Ribbentrop would not overlook the feelings which this coal question have aroused. There is a strong feeling here, although no official announcement has yet been made, that I know of, that strong action should be taken, and taken quickly, to give Finland and her neighbors a picture of Allied intentions, so far lacking. France has stated categorically that if Finland calls for aid, France will give it. It is unlikely that she would make such a statement alone. It is safe to assume that what one of the two Allied powers does or offers to do reflects the views of both. It is no exaggeration to say that London and every other European capital is seething with tension. Now, there are observers who read into these quick developments high-pressure methods to induce the frame of mind likely to consider general peace proposal. For instance, the stopping of leave to the Italian army a few days ago. If anybody is bluffing, my guess is the bluff will be called. Just as fighting goes on in Finland now, there is nothing to indicate that there's any idea of settling this thing on terms which do not accomplish the ends already enumerated by Britain and France. We return you now to America.
Back in the United States, ladies and gentlemen, in just a moment we'll take you to Berlin. But in the meantime, here's a bulletin from the Associated Press that reads, "Activity on the Finnish battlefields appear to confirm the report that we've heard that the Battle of Viipuri continues with unabated fury, with no official information on the trend of the fighting." And now for more news, we hear from our representative in Berlin.
Hello, NBC. This is William C. Kirker calling from Berlin. Last night's big sensation was the announcement that the Finnish ex-president Svinfut had arrived in Berlin. However, contrary to any circulating rumors, Svinfut has not seen any of the German officials. Instead, he moved into the Finnish embassy here in Berlin and refused to see any representatives of the press. Of course, the more speculating correspondents immediately tried to probe into this almost secret visit of the Finnish official to the capital of the Reich. However, all that could be learned is that the ex-president is staying in Berlin for 2 days only and intends to go to Rome. Rome is slowly getting to be the headquarters for important conferences between German and Italian diplomats. Herr von Ribbentrop, the German Minister of Foreign Affairs, and his entourage of officials have left Berlin this morning by special car for Rome. Ribbentrop is expected to stay in Rome for several days in order to confer with Mussolini and Graziano. Interesting is that this get-together of the Axis partners occurs at a time when the world at large anticipates big spring military undertakings to happen within the near future. In editorial comments upon this official state visit, German papers stress that the visit of the Reich's foreign minister is a new link in the continuous German-Italian exchange of opinions on matters concerning the welfare of both people. Again, they emphasize the, quote, harmony of the Rome-Berlin axis, unquote, so as to refute any rumors of supposed slackening of relationships. The Essener Nationalzeitung, which is known to be the official paper closely connected with Hermann Göring, states this latest conference in Rome has come about at a period when three occurrences of great political importance hold the attention of the world. For one, the emissary mission of Mr. Sumner H. Weld, which has not yet been completed, and then the Russian-Finnish conflict, and for another, the question of the British seizure of German coal shipments to Italy, which is still a question of vital importance. The Essener Nationalzeitung goes on to state that Europe has now entered the last decisive act of political developments before the commencement of the second phase of the war, and that the Rome conference between German and Italian officials is indicative of the close coordination of the political aims of the Italian and German governments. The article asserts, and I am quoting, "Germany and Italy will not permit the reactionary Western democracies to interfere with the creation of a new European order, and we know that neither England nor France will be bearers of this new Europe." End of quote. Peculiar thing about the visit of Herr von Ribbentrop to Rome is that the German papers say it is the first conference since Graziano conferred with Hitler and Ribbentrop at the end of the Polish campaign. However, none of us can recall any such visit to Berlin. Of course, neutral observers here in Berlin are speculating just as to the meaning of this surprise conference, and it is rumored that all questions of importance in the future game upon the European chessboard will be discussed. It is also rumored that there are decided signs of German efforts to bring about an understanding between Russia and Italy, aiming at a future trade agreement and a patch-up concordance of the differences of political ideals of Russia and Italy. Secret conferences are indeed going on in this respect. However, at the time, no particular facts are obtainable so as that this assumption may be definitely substantiated. Interesting is that today's Völkischer Beobachter, as the only German paper, mentions that Herr von Ribbentrop sent a telegram to Molotov, the foreign minister of the Soviets, congratulating him upon his 50th birthday. Big things are developing at the moment, and the stagnant scenery of the present conflict in all likelihood will assume an entirely different aspect within the near future. In spite of the fact that today's communique of the German High Command reports no activities on the Western Front, stating that during successful reconnaissance flights over British and French territories, only one German plane did not return to the home base, it is important to note that General von Brauchwitz, Chief of the Armed Forces of the Reich, is visiting the troops at the West Wall, inspecting the various formations and taking part in several maneuvers. Hello, NBC. This is William C. Kirker returning you to the National Broadcasting Company.
You have just heard from NBC representatives in London and Berlin. These early morning reports from Europe come to you each weekday morning at this same time. And now for the news in our nation's capital, as reported by Earl Godwin, we take you to Washington.
Good morning, and here in Washington, there is no way that the average observer can really tell whether or not this government is going to stick a neck out and try to intervene or even suggest anything between Russia and Finland. Officials here do not affirm or deny, but seriously, they do not close any doors on any possibilities, and that's about all you can say truthfully. Meantime, this blessed country is about to be thrown into one of the noisiest political campaigns in years, and they're making political medicine plenty right now on Capitol Hill. The Democrats, notorious for fighting among themselves, split apart in the Senate over the Hatch Act or the Pure Politics Law. Time was when the Democrats were all pure because they'd been out of power so long they just hadn't any way of being anything else but 100% white and unsullied. But today, with so much power in state and nation, it grieves many of them no end to see the Hatch Bill making it a crime for a government employee by the hundreds of thousands taking active part in political campaigns. Reason is that since Andy Jackson's day, party leaders relied on federal office holders as main cogs in party machines. But since the outburst against the use of the Army of Relief Workers in party politics, there's been an uprush of purity in Congress, especially among the Republicans. Senator Hatch's bill, in which Democratic Senator Shepard of Texas and Republican Senator Austin of Vermont had a heavy part, keeps federal employees out of party organization work. They can vote, they can contribute, of course, but that's about all. Now the Senate is trying to extend the act, and the Senate is just about split apart on the thing, and Alvin Barkley, Senate Democratic leader, has threatened to resign if they force him to call a caucus and bind the Senate Democrats into one vote. 300,000 farm leaders in 22 states at meetings and dinners last night heard the President, Jim Farley, and the Secretary of Agriculture, Wallace, extol the New Deal farm program in what were termed non-political speeches. But be that as it may, there was a very forceful farm argument also being cooked up in the Senate yesterday, where a committee prepared to add $300 million to the farm aid measure. This would about wipe out the cuts in the farm bill made by a heartless and economy-minded House of Representatives. And Congresswoman Mary Norton, Labor Committee Chairman in the House, pins back the ears of the Smith Committee for its drastic proposals to tear down the National Labor Relations Board and revise the labor law. Mrs. Norton believes in the board as it stands and in the law as it operates. Rather than have the Wagner Act and the National Labor Relations Board torn down, rebuilt, and put out as a new paint job, she's willing to close her labor committee doors, pigeonhole the proposed report, and take the labor issue to the country as a campaign matter in a presidential year. And thus, a woman may have the last word on Capitol Hill in one more issue that has split the Democrats open with a chasm as wide as the Grand Canyon. And Earl Godwin says goodbye, and that's all from Washington this morning.
With this report of Earl Godwin speaking from Washington, we bring to a close this quarter-hour program of news and observations by NBC's representatives in Berlin, London, and Washington. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
In place of the announced program, the National Broadcasting Company brings you reports now from the capitals of two European nations. It is now early Sunday morning in Helsinki and Stockholm. NBC representatives in those far-flung cities are now at their microphones waiting to speak to our listeners in the United States. We take you first to Helsinki.
Hello, NBC. This is Edmund Stevens, correspondent of the Christian Science Monitor in Helsinki, Finland. The surmise that the Soviet advance on the Karelian Isthmus would prepare the way for a Soviet peace offer has proved correct. We are now in the midst of a peace offensive just as intense in its way as the previous military offensive. And the stakes are considerably bigger, for not only are Finland and Russia involved, but all the major powers of Europe and the Scandinavians. Behind the Russian peace proposals stands Germany. It is to her interest to terminate the war in the north as speedily as possible and on any terms. For so long as Russia is involved in its war in Finland, it weakens the benefits Germany can derive from Russian-German economic agreement, and it further leaves an avenue of military attack open to England and France. At the same time, the Scandinavian countries stand in danger of being involved in the conflict. This, in turn, would be a severe economic blow to Germany by depriving her of Swedish ore, which is the principal source of supply of the German armament industry. Sweden herself has managed to keep out of war for 130 years and does not want to be dragged in now. That is why, despite her natural sympathy for Finland, she has stayed neutral and is now using all possible pressure on Finland to make her accept peace terms. For the same reasons, conversely, England and France are strongly opposed to the present peace move. Peace in Finland, especially a peace on Russia's terms, would greatly strengthen the German-Soviet bloc from both the economic and military standpoint. It cost the Russians about 300,000 men to get to Viipuri. Even if the Finns did not receive extensive foreign aid, it would cost the Russians thousands more to get to Helsinki, and every square mile of conquered territory would have to be garrisoned. At the present time, about 40 divisions, or one quarter of the total Red Army, is tied up in Finnish operations. This greatly aids the Allies if they wish to attack the German-Soviet combination through the back door, say through Baku or the Balkans. All this is aside from the fact that the Finnish war has greatly reduced the amount of supplies Germany can receive from Russia. It is therefore to the interest of England and France to keep the war in Finland going and to make every effort to prevent a peace from being negotiated. That is, unless they too are willing to make peace with Germany and recognize the conquest of Poland. The Finns, for their part, are seeking to preserve their dignity and national independence without becoming satellites of any combination of great powers. That is why they have consistently refrained from appealing to the Allies for direct military intervention, preferring to make their heroic and difficult stand against enormous odds alone, rather than commit themselves completely to the Anglo-French cause and run the risk of letting their country be used as a battlefield or base of operations in a major power war. The fact that the Allies have been rather slow in volunteering aid without such commitments from the Finns has not increased Finland's confidence in their professions of disinterested sympathy. For nearly 3.5 months, Finnish resistance has been the admiration of the world. The Finns believed their cause would enlist not only the sympathy, but the unstinting support of all who were pledged to freedom. Results have not come up to these expectations. The Finns are still determined as ever to preserve their national integrity, but being clear-headed realists as well as patriots, there are many Finnish leaders from the Field Marshal Mannerheim down who would gladly avoid additional bloodshed if an acceptable basis for peace could be found. The first Russian terms, transmitted early this week, were far from an acceptable basis. We have no official confirmation of their content beyond the Finnish government's significant statement that they were more far-reaching than the proposals Russia presented to Finland last fall. Reports of the supposed content of the proposals have been published abroad. It is said that the Russians now not only demand a naval base on the Finnish coast at Hango, but the whole of the Hango Peninsula. Not only a strip of the Karelian Isthmus, but the whole isthmus, including the city of Viipuri, as well as a considerable slice of eastern Finland, including the town of Sortavala. It would appear from this that Russia is trying to treat Finland as a defeated country. To this, the Finns will never submit, and unless Russia yields, the war will continue, in which case Finland would probably become more and more identified with the Allies. But the fact that no such tie-up has yet taken place is demonstrated by the present trip to Berlin and Rome of ex-president Svinhufvud, the first head of the Finnish state. Among Finnish statesmen, Svinhufvud has always been characterized by his pro-German orientation. His emergence from retirement now for such an assignment is significant, and though nothing can be divulged of the exact nature of his mission, it is certainly related to the peace negotiations. The final irrevocable choice has not been made yet. France and England are making every possible effort to dissuade Finland from all thought of peace, pointing out that it would mean no lasting security and promising the Finns effective military aid immediately. They are also openly discussing the desirability of a direct attack on Russia. In this light, the declaration of war against Russia, recently made by the Polish government, now housed on French territory, is less ludicrous than it seems at first. It has thrown the Russians, for one thing, into a frenzy of preparation against a possible attack on Murmansk by such formidable Polish battleships as the Repulski, the Hutski, and the Reliance scheme. Meanwhile, these moves may paradoxically facilitate the very peace settlement they were intended to prevent. For Russia, thus alarmed, may prove readier to modify her proposals to Finland. Germany will exert utmost pressure to make her do so. Three representatives of the Finnish government are right now negotiating at the Kremlin. It is believed that the delegates include Dr. Paasikivi, who took part in the ill-fated Moscow conversations of last fall. It remains to be seen whether the conferring sides will be more successful in reaching an agreement now. With the shades of the thousands who have perished in the past 3 months haunting the conference hall and the images of wasted cities vivid in their minds. This is Edmund Stevens in Helsinki, Finland. I now return you to the National Broadcasting Company in New York.
Our first report tonight was by Edmund Stevens, NBC representative in the Finnish capital. For observations now by our reporter in Sweden, we take you next to Stockholm.
This is Sweden calling. Sven Wilson speaking from Stockholm to the National Broadcasting Company. During the last few days, the question of peace moves between Finland and the Soviet Union has been the subject of lively discussion in the world's press. The Swedish capital, in particular, has been traversed by innumerable rumors, of which the great majority obviously emanate from abroad. The day before yesterday, the Swedish Department of Foreign Affairs stated that these rumors were to a large extent tendentious and often inaccurate. The department therefore strongly urged the public not to place reliance upon uninformed speculations as to the outlook for the peace move and the eventual tenor of the reported negotiations. It is quite natural that the northern countries are at present greatly interested in the restoration of peace, on condition that by preserving her full freedom and independence, it were to be an honorable peace for Finland. This view has found spontaneous expression in the Swedish press. It has been pointed out that the restoration of peace between Finland and Russia now means a chance for Scandinavia to maintain her neutrality in the Anglo-French-German war in the future, as heretofore. It has also been strongly emphasized that in the situation which has now arisen, Sweden's role cannot be that of a mediator, but only of an intermediary, and that any kind of diplomatic pressure on Finland was out of the question. which can only be an intermediary in relations between Finland and Russia, is not in a position to raise the veil of secrecy that must surround the contact which can be arranged between the conflicting parties. Incidentally, it can be mentioned that Sweden is representing Finland's diplomatic interest at the present time. Nevertheless, I think I don't go too far if I point out the following facts. Above all, it should be most firmly emphasized that all statements as to cooperation or mediation purposes or as to parallel action with Germany are completely imaginary. Every suggestion in that direction must therefore be rejected in the most categorical way. Neither Germany, nor Italy, nor any other great power has had a finger in the matter. All the journeys between Helsingfors, Stockholm, or Berlin, which have been spoken about, are, at least up to now, entirely unconnected with the efforts to achieve peaceful contact between Helsingfors and Moscow. In this category should naturally be included the recreational journey of the former Finnish president Svinhuvud to the south and the pleasure trip of the Swedish explorer Dr. Sven Hedin to Berlin. If Sweden has been in contact with the belligerent parties in its character of intermediary, it has not been her duty to adopt any attitude towards the nature of the transmitted proposals, but at all events she has had no interest in conveying proposals which Finland must immediately reject. In such a case, the attempt to establish contact would have done more harm than good. The Russian peace proposals are, however, not known, and reports which have hitherto appeared as to them have therefore referred simply to loose suppositions. In certain foreign papers there has been talk of a new Munich, but such talk is mostly an expression of the views of certain great powers and of their disappointed hopes of drawing the entire North into the war in their own interest. It need only be remembered that Czechoslovakia was prevented from fighting by the English and French statesmen in Munich, and that she was thereafter disarmed and enchained. Finland, on the other hand, has fought for freedom with the support of Sweden and the whole world, and her independence is uninfringed even if one sacrifice or another would have to be made in a peace settlement. Such sacrifices would not have the same import now as last autumn, before Finland had been able to show how unconquerable is her national will.
We have just brought you reports by NBC representatives in the capitals of Finland and Sweden. They have been heard in the United States via RCA Communications. This is the National Broadcasting Company.